Have you used this, what's it called? Arc Search Browser?
No.
I don't know if it works on Android. I have it on iOS, on the iPhone. Arc Browser. It's pretty cool because it'll do a deep dive search in any topic, and they brand this under the idea of it searching or browse the internet for you. So you normally would look up, you know, several different sources, maybe if you're doing some research on a subject or whatever. And you would go to, you know, The Guardian and The New York Times, and or maybe you ask it, what's the Arc Speak podcast? And it would say, you know, it'll look at Google, it'll look at our website, it'll look at our YouTube channel, it'll look on LinkedIn, it'll look at various locations to find out whatever it can. And then it basically presents you with a web page summary of things that it finds. So it distills it all down. It doesn't give you the full encyclopedic version of what you might find. But anyway, it's pretty cool. If you use it for something like, you know, looking up your podcast, for example, you might find it actually does a pretty good job of summarizing what it's all about. That's it. So it works as a web browser, but I find it to be a very nice search engine because it actually summarizes things for you, and it's not trying to feed you sponsored links at the top of the page, like the trash fire that Google has turned into over the years, right? Where it's like, here's all of the Google services, and then here are the sponsored posts, and then maybe on the second page now, it'll actually give you the link that you're looking for. This is actually trying to be helpful. And so, shots fired against Google. But I typed in a question because you sent me a link. I can't remember if it was last week. I don't know. I'm sure it's already been forgotten about. But I asked it what Australia's right to disconnect law is.
Oh, yes.
And so maybe I could read from the webpage here. But if I were to summarize this, where did you see this? Do you remember where you originally saw the link?
It was on Instagram. It was one of the reels on Instagram.
Okay. So it's interesting, right? Where we're getting our news nowadays.
Exactly.
But so anyway, it's legislation that the Senate has passed, the right to disconnect law, which allows workers to ignore unreasonable work-related communication outside of working hours. There's some protection. The law aims to protect workers from being penalized for not responding to work messages during their off-work time. And then the implications are that companies could face fines if they penalize employees for failing to respond to work-related communication outside of work hours. So there's more details and implications for workers. But I think we know what this is getting at, right? Which is like the boundaries have been removed from work and not work. It's like you can just work, respond at any time of the day, right?
it's like when somebody requests a meeting for 8 a.m. at 3 in the morning.
Right.
And expects, you know, why weren't you there? Well, I have the right to disconnect and, oh, I don't know, maybe sleep.
It's interesting that we've gotten to the point now where you need protection against this, because there's some like retaliation involved in, well, if you don't, you're not a team player. Somebody else does it, so why don't you? Like, these are the kind of the implied, we've all lived through this, right? It's like, there is an expectation.
Evan's always available, so why don't you be a team player, Cormac, and get on board?
Why don't you be more like Evan?
Yeah.
We talked about the curse of the green bubble too, right? Yeah. And actually having to disconnect out of the office or away from the computer. Like, I'm not here right now. And you have to, and like, this is what online messaging platforms have done to us with Teams, Slack, Zoom. Yeah. They all let people know when you're online. Instagram even does this, right? It lets you know when somebody's on Instagram so that you could have a live chat with them. Right. I get that part of it, but it's also kind of stalker, right? It's stalkery.
Yeah. It's like, Evan, I saw the green dot. I don't know why you didn't respond to my shared reel.
Like, it's because I chose to ignore you.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's not a valid choice anymore.
I got to at least tell you this.
Go for it.
So one of my coworkers had said, you know, hey, I'm going into the office. I'm going to meet up with a couple of people. I'm going to be doing this. I'm going to be doing that. So I'll be out of reach during this time and this time. And then later on, they had kind of reached out to me and they're like, hey, I was trying to get in touch with so-and-so. And they kept showing that they were green, but they didn't answer the call. And I was just like, wait, you said you were in the office? And they're like, yeah. Like, well, they're in the office too. Because, you know, I'm on a Teams call with them. And it was one of the reasons why they didn't answer the Zoom call, because they were on a Teams call.
Because they were preoccupied.
But yes. What was interesting is, like, you both were in the office. Get up, walk over there.
No. Like, yeah, that is an interesting behavioral shift that we've also witnessed happen. It
is.
Right?
This is like, hey, I saw that you were green. Like, and?
Years ago, we talked about this, but it was the opposite, right? It was like, somebody walks over to your desk and they're, I just sent you an email. Did you check that?
Yeah, that was my favorite.
So it was the double whammy. It's like, I'm going to send you an email. I expect you to answer the email immediately. I'm going to walk over and make sure you saw the email and that you actually read it. And it's like, are you serious? Come on, leave me alone. Like, I need to get work done too.
But Zoom still allows that to happen, because I've had people say, hey, what are your thoughts on that email that we just got from so-and-so? Like, wait, I didn't get it. So then I click on it and I'm like looking at it. It's like, oh, it's 9 o'clock in the morning and we just received it at 8:59. Yet here they are texting me and saying, hey, did you see that email? Like, no, let it actually hit my inbox first.
Well, what do you think about all this? Because there's, I'm kind of thinking about this from, like, we're programmed in school, architecture school, to work all the time. Like, this is what you do. You do, we talk about the all-nighters and how it's like professors encourage it. Maybe they discourage it, but it's, and they maybe they avoid it. Like talking about, well, I don't know what it's like nowadays. I really can't talk. It wasn't discouraged when we were in school.
No.
It was not discouraged at all.
And it still isn't.
I didn't do all-nighters, but it, I think it depends on the school. I know that there have been shifts in academia to, for example, turn projects in on a Friday and then do reviews on a Monday. So there's actually, you can't work on it anymore because everything that you had to turn in to submit for the project was due on Friday. So you have to get your sleep. I think they're also acknowledging that, like, you haven't been getting your sleep.
Yeah.
You need to get some sleep before you give your final presentation so that you're fresh. And that's one way that they're trying to mitigate that. But I also, like, we know that architects are programmed in schools to work all the time, right? And so that's not really changing once you get into the profession, but it's moving because everything is a team sport now. We always have to be on call.
Yeah. Think about what that kind of philosophy sets up, because it continues on into the profession and in so many different ways. So here you are, you pulling all-nighters, you're literally working till the end. And it's the same thing with deadlines. It's just like, hey, we've got a deadline at close of business on Friday. So close the business on Friday. What? As I always kind of like joke, it's just like 11:59 and 59 seconds. Yeah. And it's just like, there's deadlines, you know, it's just like, We just finished up a deadline, and there were still people who were just like, oh, I need to add a detail. Oh, I need to do this. Oh, I need to do that. Like,
more. Like, yeah. Well, you're never done. Right.
Like, when did you miss the memo that it was pencils down a week ago? Because this week was QC, printing and prepping, like prepping the model for distribution and everything else, and not.
I like how PDFs are now. You have to print a PDF. You don't save a PDF. You actually print a PDF.
That is true. You know what's interesting is, so like
the words don't die.
The deliverables for this particular project are PDFs, but individual PDFs, not like a bound PDF. It's every sheet individually. Oh yes, yes. And there's a certain And there's a certain naming convention for each file. Yeah. And then you have to have the exact same number of CAD exports with the exact same number. It's just
1-to-1.
Get this. You'll love this. It's nice. Like the PDFs are la, 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 underscore PDF dot PDF. I swear to you, that's what. And then, of course, the CAD files are blah, 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 whatever the name is, underscore CAD dot DWG. Then we have to basically kind of, wow, this will amuse you. A error-free, clash-free model. Like, really? That you're like, okay, hold your breath. Hold your breath on that one.
Anyway, back to the subject.
Yeah.
This whole idea of being on call at all hours. And so you're talking about client expectations also, right? So it's not just in the echo chamber. It's outside of the echo chamber potentially as well. Depends on how demanding the client is. But this law is going into effect potentially, I guess, in Australia. I think the parliament would still have to pass it. But it's to protect workers' sanity, to protect their time that they're not contracted to work. I think it's really interesting. And so I guess the real subject here is, when does anybody, and I think that you probably will have a lot to say about this, when does anybody get any deep work done?
So glad you brought that up. So I commented to somebody the other day that I had been on 6 hours of meetings throughout the day.
Yeah.
Leaving me.
So that you could hang up at the end of the day and start working.
Yeah.
Right.
Leaving me, if I just did the 8 hours, leaving me 2 hours to actually do work. And so we've been trying to force ourselves and enforce it with other people that let's try to, yes, project managers typically have to do a lot of meetings, a lot of coordinating, and a lot of all of that stuff. And so aren't really technically supposed to be picking up a pencil and drawing things unless they're doing like QAQC or something like that. But on the occasion where I'm just like, it's a lot faster if I just draw this detail rather than trying to explain it. Oh, even though that kind of goes against my rules of trying to explain it to people so that they understand it so they could do it.
There are some times when there's just not enough time to do that.
Sometimes, yeah. Exactly.
Right. It happens.
And so you just like, everybody's like, if you need me to do this by tomorrow, I actually need time to work. So leave me alone.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's because we're too accessible. There used to be the time, it's just like, when we were accessible by phone, it was almost because you had to go through the effort of actually calling someone, it almost limited the amount of time, A, that you were going to spend on the phone, and B, like, it's like, okay, I don't have time to make a phone call right now. I'll call later. But as somebody's sitting here and talking, say you and I are having a meeting and we're recording an episode or something, and then you just see me slightly glance away and I start, you hear this little click, 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 click.
I've never seen that.
Exactly. As I'm responding to somebody else. And so like, it's just like, hey, we need to set up a call.
Your attention's divided.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's just like, when do we say enough's enough? I actually have to get the work that you're expecting me to do done. So how about we just hang up the phone and just do something, or hang up the Zoom and let's just do it. It really is pushing this, that old joke of like, well, if, you know, this meeting could have been an email. Well, 9 times out of 10, yeah, they absolutely could be, should be.
Yeah. This idea of getting deep work done, I think people feel this and they don't know what to do about it because we're being inundated and distracted to death.
Yeah.
With, I mean, this actually is the problem with tools like Slack and Zoom and Teams. Any of these tools where they just are going off all the time. And the funny thing is, all of these tools are positioned as the solution to email.
Yeah.
Because email was such a big problem of being inundated with email.
Yeah.
Well, this didn't solve that at all. All this did was further make a mess out of the situation. And so now you have to control your notification systems with do not disturb or focus modes on your phone, or you have to turn notifications off, or you have to really dig into the settings and figure out what you're willing to see. If you want to see the badge icons, like the number of unread emails versus the just the email icon, right? And there's levels to all of this that you then have to become pretty good at managing because you know what push your buttons. Okay, so I'm gonna just, you might not like this because I think you said you go through at the end of the day and you try to clear out your inbox, right?
Yeah.
I don't actually have notification badges on my phone turned on, but they are here on my computer. And let's see if I can make this big enough to read because my eyes are so bad. Come on. 71,000 something is my unread count on my email.
71,000.
Yeah.
Did I? I'm sorry.
I've mentally declared bankruptcy on what's in that email app.
Sounds like the number of drawings that we just submitted.
Well, you've done a lot more work than I have done ignoring these emails.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, but that's the thing.
That's the number. Yeah. Like that's what we live in. Like that's the reality of it. And so when do we have time to actually do the work that we're supposed to be doing, that we're actually getting paid the big bucks to do?
Right.
So I'm wondering, what do you do? Like, what are some practical tools to do that? Because like the answer could just be, well, I just squeeze it in. Like, and that to me doesn't seem like super practical because you never know when you're going to be able to squeeze it in. So you can't really plan for that.
So I try to, this is the key word here, is I try to manage it this way where I do maybe 50 minutes of work or meetings per hour and then go in and check emails for the 10 minutes. Because even though we've declared that there really isn't a architectural emergency, other people feel like there are. And, well, you know, specifically.
And you can't do anything about that. Right?
You really can't do anything about that. So, you know,
you could teach them a lesson.
Well, I mean, you know, it's just like,
does not,
you
know, declare it your emergency.
Exactly. I mean, there's the old adage is your, your emergency is not I've forgotten it now. You know what I'm talking about.
It wasn't that important.
Clearly.
Yeah.
But that never works, or it doesn't seem to work as effectively as I would like it to. I can't schedule ahead enough because there's just so much stuff going on with all the, you know, like the multitude of different projects that I'm working on and juggling those people and making sure that work is disseminated and work is checked and QAQC is happening and clients are being responded to and all that other stuff. So it really, in my particular case, it ends up being dealer's choice. It's like, what's, you know, what card is, you know, being pulled next? Oh, it's the Evan card. Well, let me figure out what Evan needs.
I totally know. So you're just constantly reacting at that point.
You're
just bouncing off the walls as you work your way through the tunnel.
I think, and clearly it's not necessarily the best way, but it is the reactionary way.
Yeah. Do you ever just book time in your calendar to get work done? Because actually booking time in your calendar at least makes it so that other people can't book a meeting with you, because
I do.
That's a huge problem is that people can actually just book time in your calendar. And I think if you are the kind of person who has a link in your email signature to book a meeting with you, like through Calendly or FindTime or one of the like services out there, then you clearly don't even respect your own schedule.
Right.
If you don't respect your schedule, how can you expect somebody else to?
True.
I think that is.
Now, I will say
very aware of
that. Even though I book, like, say, if I book like 2 hours a day or something like that, that are sort of like pure focus time of like get some of the work done or get this, you know, done or that done. The bigger question is do those other people respect that I actually have blocked that time? Or they say, you know, hey, I just sent you a meeting.
I tried to book a meeting with you, but that didn't work because I decided to give you a phone call instead.
Yeah. Or I went ahead and scheduled it, even though the scheduler says that you're already booked.
It's like on the phone, right? Where it's like, Cormac has a notification silenced. Send anyway. Deliver quietly or something.
Like, no, I want to yell.
Never choose that option. because like the message got through, like they'll get it when they get it, right? It's not that important, but there are levels of importance to messages that need to get through. Like you kind of do need the bat phone sometimes, right? But you also have to have real boundaries in place. And I feel like technology is not solving this problem. And technology is actually training people the opposite direction that this should be going, which is that you should just be available at all times. And now we're seeing laws being put in place to protect workers because tech has actually made the problem worse. Yeah. It's not only failed us, it's exacerbated the problem. And then people totally abuse it.
Oh, yeah.
Now they're just in the mode of abusing it. And I'm not quite sure
there is
we do about this.
There is no off time. There is no weekends. There is no personal time anymore. I got a text from somebody today while I was grocery shopping. And I'm like, well, that could be something that'll happen tomorrow because it's well past normal hours. And I looked at it real quickly. I put marked as unread so that I remember to go back and look at it, tomorrow. But I'm going to look at it tomorrow because boundaries, people.
Yeah. I mean, the good thing about, and is fun, I saw this tweet today by a friend of mine, John Pearson, and it was like, the cool thing about taking 2 weeks off is that when you come back, like it's all the same.
Yeah.
Like the world didn't end. The projects didn't burst into flames. Like it's just exactly how you left it.
I have a friend who, when they go on vacation, so say they go on a 2 week vacation, and like what they do try to do is before they go on vacation, they try to clear out their emails or at least answer all of the pertinent ones. They have their out of office set for the 2 weeks they're back. So when they come back and say in those 2 weeks, they got 2,000 emails, they'll basically delete all of those and say, if they knew I wasn't here, if they need to reach me now that I'm here, they will reach out again.
Yeah. They'll just send them. Yeah.
It's just like,
just send it again.
It's like, hey, Evan,
you can't dig back out of that hole. How long would it take you to dig out of that hole?
Sometimes.
And again, you have to get things done. Right. You actually have to do the job. Right. And the job is not email. Like, that's not the job.
Right. I wish people would hear that again. The job is not email. Email is just a correspondence when you don't want to pick up the phone. Or if you claim, I'm going to type this out because I want to make sure that this is on record.
You have to document it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, to that point, there are things you definitely do not want to document.
True.
Right.
Exactly. Dear Evan, you can. Yes, you can.
No, Cormac is not suited for that role. I don't want that in an email. But the whole idea of actually getting work done and the busy work is not the work. I think it is something that we need to keep telling ourselves.
Right.
Because we talked, I think it was last episode or maybe the episode before that, where it's like if leadership knew how much time you were spending doing XYZ, it could just be email. It could be printing files. It could be syncing to ACC. It could be uncorrupting something. It could be trying to make sure all your consultants are on the same version of Revit. It could be so many things. That is not the job.
Yeah.
None of those things are the job. It could be people trying to assign permissions to the model. And it's like, this was never a job before. And leadership is disconnected enough to not know that those things are happening and how much time they're taking of everybody's day away where they're not doing the work.
My project, the current project that I'm doing, is so big that it's actually broken up into three models. On average, those three models take roughly around, if you know, say you close them out in the evening, on average, it takes about 50 minutes per model to open up.
50 just to open the file.
Just to open the file. And yes, it is a massive file, multiple buildings and all of that other stuff and all of the data, all the families, all of everything else, all of the linked and shared models and so on. And they're massive and they take forever to open.
And multiply that times every person on the job, times every day of the week.
Yep.
For as long as that project goes on, yeah, which it's ramped up over time.
Yeah.
It didn't start out at 50 minutes,
but
you're at that point now.
No,
but you can easily put metrics to all of this
stuff.
Yeah. And you can say, here's how much time is completely wasted.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And we're doing email
on
top of that.
It's just like, well, while you're doing this, you could do this and you do this. And
go ahead.
Sure, I do that because I don't want to be non-billable, but it's just like, these are times, or if a model crashes and you have to recover it and everybody has to like save their local and then BIM, you know, the BIM manager comes in, sweeps in, kind of like helps save the day and stuff, except for when it's like, well, there goes, as it happened to me just a few days ago, when of course, you know, we're in the rush and I'm trying to just, you know, do a bunch of things that hadn't been done or just clean up a couple of things. And 6 hours goes by. And yes, I had, you know, synchronized or at least saved. But they had to basically back it up like a full day. And I'm like, wait, there goes all of my work.
Mm-hmm.
It was like,
right.
You know, so then you say, okay.
How often does that happen?
On this particular,
it's ridiculous.
On this particular job, on this particular model, we're getting crash. We get daily crashes. You know, not all the time is it corrupted where we have to.
The user's fault, though, I just have to say.
Not me.
Stupid crap in that
model. Well, yeah. Yeah.
Taking shortcuts.
I was.
Putting junk in there. Exploding CAD files.
Well, thankfully, they don't do that. And, you know, what's interesting is, like, this particular project, we're scrutinized so much on, like, model health and clashes and, you know, accuracy.
Because of your client.
Because of the client. That we at least do the steps of things right, not necessarily saying that people are drafting or documenting correctly, but, you know, that's a different conversation. But it's just it's an unwieldy model. I mean, it's enormous how big this thing is.
The crazy thing about this, and I'm just thinking of my friend Mark, who he hand drafts on the weekends because that's when he can get work done. And so he has a small architecture practice that's just his and his wife's, and they do small residential projects. He does big architecture during the week, and he manages people, and he probably spends way too much time in his inbox. But on the weekend, he turns on the music and goes to the studio and draws projects and actually gets work done.
Yeah.
That's what a lot of architects do.
Yeah.
They work on the weekends to get work done. And I don't know what the answer is to
and
this, because that is legitimately people's solution to this problem.
And that's not really sustainable either. You know,
you're
working and managing, you know, projects and people and clients and everything else throughout the week, and then actually working on the weekend. You know, when is your time gonna? When do you get your time? Like, why are we working so much to do what?
Yeah.
Work more?
This is one of those things where I saw an interesting solution using Microsoft's Copilot AI thing. And it was like, okay, you can see all my OneNotes, you can see all my emails, you can see the meetings I was in because they were all on Teams. And they're part of some maybe early access enterprise edition of this or whatever. But it was like, go through, tell me, give me a synopsis of this week. And he said that it pulled up like six things that he completely missed. And it was like, they were legit things that he needed to address, and it caught them and he didn't. I thought that was really interesting, because not that this is the answer, because seriously, if there's that much crap flying at you, like, you're going to miss things and you can't even rely on this to catch everything. And even if you did, do you have more time in the day to do it? I don't know what the answer here is. I'm just bringing this up as like, everybody wants to say technology is going to solve this, AI is going to solve this, but I kind of don't think it is. I kind of feel like it's like what BIM did to architecture. We just put more crap in the project.
Right.
We don't have more time to spend crafting a project. right? It's just gone the other direction. It's like more data, shortcuts, cram more level of detail in there, mm-hmm. spend more time making things exactly right, coordinating, clash-free, like you said, a clash-free model, right? Like, when has that ever been a thing? It's never been a thing,
right?
So it wasn't on paper, and it's not in BIM either. Just because BIM gives us the ability to do it, like, ideally, does it happen? No, it doesn't. And so it's like thinking about all this, and there's more, the onus is always on us to do more. Is AI just gonna, you know, tools like this just going to cause us to do more and more and more? And instead of shifting the focus away from the stuff that doesn't matter and really just filtering out the good stuff, which I kind of wish we could get a heck of a lot better at, is like, what actually do we not need to pay attention to?
Right.
What are the things that can just automatically get filtered away? That doesn't seem to be happening, at least yet.
So there's firms that I've worked with, like engineering firms and stuff, that have, like, you know, essentially what's called a document controller. And it's a person who basically, you know, kind of is that AI, where they're included on all of the emails. So if I'm like emailing you something, it also bounces to them. And so they basically filter it, and they're like, you know, hey, Evan, you know, and they start prioritizing things. It's like, you know, Cormac had requested, you know, this and this,
right?
On Monday. It's now Wednesday. We haven't really seen.
You want to follow up?
Did you not follow up? But, you know, how can I help with following up and getting that information? Or they follow up and get that information for me before you even realize that it was. And then they just reply back from them and you that here's the information that you requested. But that's in the ideal world of AI. I mean, that would be what I would like, you know? And so when you were saying that this Microsoft software was essentially saying, you know, here are the six things that you missed, I can guarantee you that with the, you know, couple hundred emails per day that I get, that there is plenty of things that I miss, even though I try,
right?
You know, and, or, you know, being able to prioritize and say, hey, early on you receive this email, and then they superseded it with this email. This is the new request. Take care of this, rather than having to go and look at like the other five emails that was the same thing. And that's where I hope some of this like assistance comes from, instead of, you know, because those are the things
you want to, you want a virtual assistant.
Yeah, I want a virtual assistant.
And that doesn't have to be a real person, but I mean, it could be a system like this. But I think it's just kind of disheartening to go back to why we got into this profession, to do what we wanted to do, to do what we're gifted and talented to do, and all of those things, and how much time is actually spent
doing it,
pushing paper, you know, as the old analogy for the digital version of that today, right? It's just,
I
there's so much time being spent here that it's just disheartening.
I used to call people paper pusher architects, 8.5 by 11 architects, you know, and it was because like, that's all they do is push paper.
Because they weren't D size or E size.
Well, architects. No, it was just like, you know, all they were doing is they were just pushing paper. You know, they weren't, they weren't, you know, drafting details or things like that.
Right.
And even though I'm still knee deep in projects, I'm also an 8.5 by 11 architect, you know? And
you're a 24-inch screen architect. One of them has Outlook, Teams, Zoom.
Yeah. These are 21. It's a shame.
21, even worse.
That's even worse. That's why I've got the readers.
Right.
The readers are fun. But they're like, it's there, and then the screen, you know. So three. And how do you focus on all of those, or jumping back and forth and everything else? And
you turn your head a lot.
Yeah.
You're distracted. Look at there. Well, what do you think? Do you think this Australian thing is a good idea? Do you think it's, I mean, I wonder if it's just a stopgap. I wonder if it's just like the thing that is needed to snap us out of this kind of madness.
I will say because I was going to say, it's a shame that they had to resort to that. It's just like, enough's enough. You know, You pay mm-hmm. me from, you know, you, I'm a 40-hour employee. And, right. you know, you're asking me to be an 80, you know, or, you know, how many hours are there in a full week? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I really honestly don't know.
The number.
Whatever.
A big number.
A big yeah. number. But that's
24 times seven.
But that but that's essentially what they are asking you to be, is available 24/7. And mm-hmm. if they're not willing to compensate you for being a 24/7 or reward you with promotion or whatever to be that 24/7 person, then it's sad that we actually have to put in stopgaps to prevent people from abusing employees beyond what you're contractually, what they're contractually obligated or had agreed upon, right? It's
this is kind of progressive. I wonder if the U.S. would ever, you know, maybe there's a couple states, you know, California would probably lead the way with this, but that to implement something like this. But it is interesting that it's happening in Australia first.
Yeah. I mean,
at least that I'm aware of. I could be wrong about that. Maybe that's not the first, but it's the first I've heard of.
It's the first I heard of, and it really does seem to go against like everything that the American worker has sort of, mm-hmm. because I mean, for some reason we take pride in overworking. And so I find it really hard because, you know, there's always that attitude. It's just like, well, if you're not going to do it, you know, I can get somebody else who will.
There's someone else who
exactly.
will.
Exactly. Right. You know, it is just like, yeah. you're like, well, good luck with that kind of thing. But, you know, people are so afraid of.
Not enough people can say no to that. Right.
Exactly. And since there's not enough people to say no to that, it will continue to perpetuate. It will continue to grow and grow. And people will just be like, well, you know, I'm here for you whenever you need me. Like,
I'm not willing to get into the next part of this conversation, which is like the unionization of architecture, at least after how long we've already been going on here.
Right.
But this is, I think this is in line with that.
Yeah.
It's to protect
yeah.
workers in this field. And coming up with protections like that is definitely a step in that direction. I don't know if that's a step in the right direction. I don't know if architecture is the right field to unionize. Right. And like I said, this is a topic that I don't even know enough about to really speak intelligently about it, but I do know that this is in line with that. So,
you know, it would be interesting to see how unionization in architecture would work. And growing up as a, you know, son and grandson of auto workers who were also in the UAW, it was basically for protecting them from being overworked and because it all led to, you know, essentially safety on the job. Because if you're overworked and you're tired and everything else and you're, you know, working on a line, you know, that's dangerous, right? And so that's sure. why you saw the strength in numbers of union workers in kind of factory type jobs, you know, manufacturing type jobs mm-hmm. and things like that. Whereas when you say it's okay, well, what are we protecting? You know, like what would a union protect you against? And it's easy. We've been talking about it. It's the abuse of a person's time, especially when you have a contract with somebody and that contract is for the 40 hours. And we're say like, yeah, but Evan, I really, you know, like, hey, look, Joe over here is doing 60 hours and he's not complaining. Why aren't you doing 60 hours? And then they guilt you into it. And then you're like, all right, fine. I'll do 60 hours if, you know, because I'm worried about my job. And, you know, and like this right to detach is basically the first step in saying, you know, enough's enough. I mean, the you know, we say abuse. Employers don't really necessarily see it as abuse. They're just like, you know, hey, you know, like if you're willing to give us the time, then, you know, that's on you, not on us.
Well, yeah, you're a resource. Yeah. They're charging their clients for the use of at a higher rate than what they're paying you. That's the definition of business right there.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you're willing to do it, they're.
But
they're
see, that's the thing though, is where I was gonna finish that thought up is like, if you're willing to do it, and no one's really willing to do it, but a lot of times we're guilted into it, we're pressured into it, we're forced into it, and, you know, to be able to protect ourselves from that. from the coercion, the, you know, the, you know what, Evan, if you're just not going to be a team player, you know, we're just going to have to let you go. I mean, and then you're just like, oh my God, I've got to pay bills. I've got to keep a roof over my head and stuff like right. that. All right, fine, fine, fine. I'll come in for those 60 hours, you know, or I will cover somebody else's shift, or I'll do this or that. And so, you know, and not every time is somebody so very blatant about it. They sort of like covertly coerce you into doing it by the guilt trips and everything else and stuff like that. And just making a hostile work environment that, you know, we need to protect ourselves.
Puts you in a bad position.
Exactly. Yeah. Because then they look at you. You're the one who's the problem here, Evan, because you're like coming in on time and leaving on time. And you're not giving your 110%, you know, and all of this other crap. And then you're guilted into it and stuff. And so, you know, it's that, that, you know, this law and unionization and all of that other stuff can protect you against that. Most of the time people don't see white collar workers as needing to have, like the unionization protections.
Yeah. I mean, but you see it in schools, right? You see it in the university. You do see it in those situations, but for, you know, to protect pay and all of that kind of stuff. So, all right. Well, go Australia. I don't know. From my very summarized understanding of this, it does seem like it might be necessary. I don't know if it applies across the board. It sounds like it does, but I can see why we've gotten to this point. I'll say that.
Isn't it just a shame that it's gotten to this point?
Totally.
Because nobody, you know.
But I saw this coming.
Yeah, exactly. Sure.